Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. My name is Julia. I'm in my early 30s and living in a Jesuit young adult community. We all live these hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. So this podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and to think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. Every week I meet a new guest who tells me about something they experienced which changed their life forever. By talking about the things they wish they'd known at the time, we explore the idea that God isn't on all things. And we'll talk about the part that faith played in navigating life challenges. So today I'm speaking to Manuela. Manuela came to the UK, came to study at university. And since then, she's got married and had two children. And she does a lot of work working with homeless projects in London. And what I really loved about this conversation with Manuela is that she's so open and honest about how she ended up here in the UK, thinking she was doing something exciting and something different. And actually, her whole journey changed from that moment. And God put her somewhere she wasn't expecting. Tell me about yourself.
So my name is Manuela. I come from Italy originally, and I am 33 years old, and I've been in the UK since 2008.
So where did you grow up in Italy?
So I am from a town called Agrigento.
And I've just realised we should probably introduce our special guest today.
Yes, of course. So I think you can hear him in the background. His name is Matteo, and he is going to be 6 months next week. He's 25 weeks old.
Oh, exciting. So obviously now we can tell you've got a family.
Yes.
And you come here. So what made you decide to move to the UK?
When I was 13 years old, my dad got a contract to work at the Italian consulate in New York. We were there as a family for about 4 years. They stayed for 2 more years. And after my high school time in New York, I thought it would be really cool to like continue to speak English, but maybe be a bit closer to Sicily because I knew that my parents eventually would have gone back to Sicily. So we'd made a trip to Scotland, actually, and Ireland when I was about 8 to 10 years old. I don't really remember. And I was fascinated by this country and especially like the colleges and the universities of this country. So I thought, what better opportunity? At that time, you know, the program Erasmus was kind of through. But even so, I thought, I actually want to try and move there. So given the open borders, I thought, let's just try and study in the UK and see what happens. And then I went to Oxford Brookes University and did a bachelor's there and then a master at LSE. And then here I am. I kind of thought I was going to leave after that or maybe work a little bit and go elsewhere, but I'm still here.
What made you stay then?
Well, it was a combination of things, but it basically, the main thing was that I feel like I found my mission in London, my life's mission. Found my husband here, even though he's also Sicilian. How funny. And I've also met some great friends. So I decided to stay.
I'm really intrigued. And how did you meet your husband?
So it was January 2012. And I was a student at LSE at that time. And I had met some friends by going to mass at my local parish. And they had said, "Ooh, you should join us to make some sandwiches for people living in the streets." And I thought, "Ooh, that's an interesting experience." I didn't really think anything of it. I just thought I'd go this one time and, hey, Matteo. I thought I'd go this one time. And then my life kind of changed since then because I met the community of Sant'Egidio and started making sandwiches on a Saturday afternoon with these people who became, you know, my friends and my community. And then we would go out and we would distribute sandwiches in the streets of London. At the beginning, it was around Kensington. You'd think that Kensington is a very rich area, but there were a lot of people in need there. There still are. And then, yeah, in January 2012, one of those people was my husband, but I would have never said then. He was probably cutting either tomatoes or eggs. We always debate on this.
We were just discussing before about this idea of finding the love of your life.
Yeah.
So did you like meet him as he was cutting whatever he was cutting and think, that's the man I'm going to marry?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I thought he was a very nice person. And, you know, I was there for another purpose. And I still am in Sant'Egidio for a different purpose. It just so happened that I met my husband there. And we are very different people. So I never would have thought that we'd end up together.
So I'm being very nosy now, but how did you end up together?
Well, I actually, basically, we got to know each other, you know, for every Saturday we'd meet, we'd make sandwiches, we'd pray and we'd go out. We'd walk together and we would make our homeless friends the center of that Saturday. But obviously there were social times before and after that where we got to meet and know each other a bit more. And through that, I mean, in the very beginning, we were very, very different. So it was even very difficult to talk about things. I think that in the shallow part of the interests that we have, we're very different. So he likes one kind of music, I like another kind of music. So these are the things that you start discussing at the very beginning. You're like, oh, what music do you like? And it's like, oh, I really like metal. And I'm like, well, I don't even know one song, so I don't know what to say. So it was kind of like conversation stoppers. And then the more we actually talked about more serious things, the more we understood that we were kind of aligned in that and in our faith. And so, yeah, it took us a little while to understand. And then in July of 2013, we decided, let's give it a go. And it was really scary because at that point, he was a very, very big friend of mine.
Yeah, I can imagine. And there's always that fear. But I'm going to take you back. I realize I kind of jumped way ahead when we started talking about you meeting your husband and that's your reason for settling. But when you first came here, was it an easy transition?
I kind of was expecting a cultural shock, if you know what I mean, because I had already moved when I was 13 from like a tiny town in Sicily to like New York City. So you could imagine like wow. That is. And it was also when I was 13. So I was like massive shock. Took me quite a while to kind of figure out what was going on. And then I kind of like, I wouldn't say got the hang of it, but I got some adrenaline boosts on like, oh, I want to know other places and it's so cool. And like, I've got so nice to meet diverse people and different people other than what I knew in Sicily. So I was like, let's go to the UK. And when I came here, it was different. I was lucky though, because I met one of my best friends at uni, and she was older than me, and she kind of guided me through stuff and was very unbiased. And I would ask the silliest questions, like, I don't know, what do you eat or what do you do in this country, or what's Cadbury, what kind of certain chocolate is this? And then she'd like buy all these varieties of chocolate and be like, these are all the chocolates that we have in this country. And it was really lovely. And she kind of helped me and guided me through knowing a little bit more about the UK in general. And
that's so lucky, kids. Like, some people can end up moving country and feeling really isolated, but you were lucky to find someone quite quickly who welcomed you and brought you in as well, which is really nice.
Yeah, what I found a bit isolating when I moved to this country was kind of the going to mass, because there weren't that many people from my uni going to mass. There weren't that many people, especially when I moved to London after having been in Oxford for 3 years, because at least there was a Oxford Brookes chaplaincy. So I lived there for a bit. So that was a bit of a community as well. But when I came to London, it was also big and it took me a little while to kind of figure out. And yeah, the most random thing happened, which is I met Sant'Egidio, and I'll always be grateful for that, because if you think about the chances of that happening, they're so slim. And so you think that there is kind of like a design behind that.
I was just thinking about, like, there's such a romantic idea of living in London. And for a lot of people, they get to London and it feels quite isolating. It's a big city. They don't know people. And I think that is one of the advantages of, if you have a church background, that you can find that community. Not doesn't always work for everyone, but like, you can find that community in church. And I think that's one of the great things about the London Jesuit Centre and Farm Street.
Absolutely.
Is, particularly if you're a young adult coming to London, you can find that community because there is that young adult mass as well.
Yeah.
And you found that community in a different way as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did come to Mass in Farm Street, and it's always been so beautiful.
I was about to say, what point did you decide you are staying here? But maybe you haven't made that commitment. Maybe it's a short-term couple of years. What is the plan? I'm kind of asking, are you planning to stay long term, or are you?
Yeah, I mean, this is always an open question because it depends on, and then, you know, you have to consider so many factors. But for now, the plan is to stay. And I think that I kind of found my mission in London, in the sense that the work that we do with Sant'Egidio is very, is something that I can't think my life without. I'm not sure if that's how you say it in English, but
yeah.
When I came to London, I had this idea that I was going to find a job that would make me travel and go around the world, especially, you know, go in developing countries, because that's what I studied, communication, media and development, and, you know, work with NGOs in different countries, and kind of, I've always had this idea of wanting to help others, but I never thought that I would find people in need in a rich city as big as London and as rich as London. And when I did find that out, it was quite surprising. And I thought that that could be my mission, and I stayed. Can I just go back to one thing that you said as well, like that people find it isolating moving countries? I think it's true. And I just wanted to say also, I think I've been very lucky because, you know, I've moved when I had means, when I had a family supporting me, and I didn't move because of like war reasons or violence reasons, or, you know.
You moved out of choice rather than necessity. I moved out of choice.
And I think it's, really important to think that, you know, if somebody moves out of choice, it's hard. But if somebody moves because, you know, they their village is being burned down, or their town's being burned down, or they're not accepted in their own country, I think that is devastating. And it's really, really way more difficult. And I can't really imagine that, really.
No, I was gonna ask you, then my next question was going to be, where is home? But for those people, home is probably where they've had to leave, and they're now being forced to find a new home. The reason I was going to ask you where is home is I hate the question people ask me, which is often the first question they ask you, which is, where are you from? Because I was born in one part of the UK. I spent 14 years growing up in Amersham in Buckinghamshire. And then I've moved around a lot since then for university and stuff. And so I don't have this like sense of belonging. And my parents have moved as well. So they live in another place that wasn't my childhood home. So I'm intrigued for you. Where is your sense of home?
Yeah, I've kind of stopped asking that question exactly because of that. People tend to want to stereotype you or put you into certain buckets. And instead of asking where is home, I now ask myself, where do I want home to be? And how can I make that happen? Not just for me, but for others, because a lot of people don't have the sense of belonging that you're talking about. I think it is, you know, a problem of our age, of this world, that a lot of young people, you know, we have so many opportunities and it's really hard to make a choice. And then at the same time, there are diasporas happening everywhere in the world. So people are obsessed with having this kind of belonging, and they hold on to their ideas. And sometimes that becomes nationalism, that becomes, you know, kind of self, I can't remember the word for it, sorry guys. Like self-affirming or self-affirmance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think that that's, yeah, I think that that should, I think if we were more accepting of each other's complex backgrounds, and, you know, if we were seeing each other more as individuals rather than belonging to a certain group of people, then I think we would have less extremism in the world.
I was talking to one of my friends who's from Kent, and I have found, I love Kent. I'm just going to clarify that before I say the next sentence. But I found people from Kent claim Kent as their own place. And that's beautiful. But I don't have that sense of claiming because I'm not from Kent or anywhere in particular. And so I jokingly was yesterday with him, like, I am from Earth. Because yeah. Like, that's how all I yeah. could claim. And like, there is that kind of sense of, if we all could just claim we're up from Earth, maybe we'd all be more united in a way.
I really think so. I mean, every Wednesday we meet up, we still make sandwiches for people living in the streets. We pray and then we go out to distribute those sandwiches. But for us, the sandwiches is kind of an excuse to be able to talk to people living in the street. And the same thing happens though. Like, once you're homeless, people start stigmatizing you and they start saying, oh, that person's homeless. That's it. Like, they're nothing else. But we forget that they're sons, daughters. We forget that they're mothers, fathers. We forget that they're exactly like us. So they're also from earth, as you say.
Yeah, I was really challenged, I think about 6-7 years ago, by someone who said, you shouldn't call a person a homeless person. You should call a person experiencing homelessness, because it's not their identity. It's something they're experiencing at this time. And so like, it's that change in attitude around it as well that we need.
Yeah, definitely.
And now that we've had that deep conversation, I have kind of two areas of questions I want to ask you, which is, first, if you could go back in time to when you were applying to university and deciding to move here, what piece of advice would you give yourself?
I would just say, first of all, everything's going to be okay, but not in the way that you expect. And that's fine. That's what I would say to myself. And I think I would also say, you know, don't try to fit in. Try more to strive towards what your mission is. Try more to think about not just what you want to do, but also what God would like you to do. And, you know, try to do some more discernment in that way, rather than try to like fit in. Because at the end of the day, if we all were to, you know a bit more about each other, we would all understand that none of us fit in, you know, and then we're all trying to pretend that we're fitting in some sort of categories. But if we spend less time at doing that and more time in actually working out what it is that we want to do, or what it is, how we can help others maybe experiencing the same thing, we could end up in a nice place.
I love you talking about your mission and that kind of being your purpose of why you're here. And I fully understand that's your reason for being here. I wonder, though, how do your parents feel about it?
That's a good question. One of the things that we do in Santa Gidio is a Christmas meal for people living in the streets and older people. And we do that on the 24th or the 23rd or 25th of December. So it's kind of like at Christmas time. And, you know, it was a challenge to tell my parents at the beginning. And one of the things that they did the first year was, okay, well, we'll come to you and we'll spend Christmas together. And that was really lovely. It was truly such a blessing to be doing my mission with my parents at that time when I was younger. Then I did have this one year where I went back home and it just didn't feel the same. Like, not that I don't want to be home, or not that, you know, there is a calling. And my parents, they understand, sometimes reluctantly, but they do understand that this is what makes me happy. And not only that, it's how I live my life to the full for the Lord. So I think they understand. It's not that it's not a sacrifice or that it's not hard at times, but we compromise, and it is for the purposes of others. And I'm not trying to be like, ooh, I'm a saint, you know, because I actually feel called to do this. So I think for me particularly, I want to be able to do this, because it's very important to me. And there have been in the past conversations with my family, and I understand that in some sort of way they are also sacrificing their own plans for the holidays. But what we get is just so much more, because at the end of the day, we're building a community, we're building a family with people that don't have a family, that also give me joy and happiness.
I can imagine that it's hard for them as well, that being away from their daughter and their grandchildren as well for them.
Yeah it is, but we do go back when we can, and they understand.
And I guess also we live in a day and age where we were talking before about Instagram, and we live in a time of like video calling as well, so you can see them regularly. And my three little nephews, their grandparents are in the US, so they have that kind of relationship with their grandparents too.
But I guess it's all about, what does Christmas mean to you, or Easter mean to you? And those are times when God calls us to welcome his word in certain different ways. For example, at Christmas time, he came in a manger and he was not welcome by anyone. And for me, it is important to say with my life, actually, the people who have the same face of God, which are the people living in the streets, are older people who are really lonely, are the marginalized, or the people who have disabilities, they are welcome. And I want to do my little bit to kind of welcome God in that way.
And we all should. There is a thing about your vocation being where your desire of what you want to do and the need of the world fit together and meet up. And that's where you find your vocation. And that sounds exactly like what you found as well.
Yeah. And it's not always easy. You know, it's not like we don't have doubt. Not like I want to be very realistic with you. It's not that is all like a fantasy, but you sacrifice something and you get so much more. Look at Mary, right? You have this girl, right? Very young girl, woman. And she says the biggest yes of all. And I mean, by saying that, yeah, she sacrificed her own life. But what more did she get? And what did she give the world, right? It was incredible. Because if Mary had said no, then it would have been a very different story.
My next question was going to be, what challenges have you found around this change? I was thinking about it in terms of challenges and compared to what you were dreaming when you were 17 or 18 applying to university. I guess you kind of had this dream world of what it was going to be like moving to the UK to study, probably with no intention ever that you'd still be here now. I'm just intrigued what challenges you found that you weren't expecting in that time.
Well, first of all, it is very difficult to be far away from the home that you know and to build a whole new life. So that's the first challenge. The second challenge is feeling like, where is my community? Whereas now, thankfully, you know, I feel like I am more of an agent in that. I feel myself capable of creating community. There's like tiny challenges and big challenges from which bank is better to, like, I now have two kids with my husband. And because my parents didn't have kids in this country, I didn't know what benefits I could get, or I didn't know what maternity leave was like. It's all these things that you kind of have to figure out by yourself because the previous generation doesn't know. So there's little things that your mom tells you that you're like, oh, okay, like that's what it is. Or if you don't hear it from your mom, you hear it from your relatives. But for somebody that is here and doesn't have family here.
Two of my good friends have just had a baby and they're both from Brazil. So they're experiencing these similar challenges to you. I don't have children, so I don't know it from that kind of perspective. But as I said, I've got three little nephews, so I kind of learned things through them and through their parents that I've been able to like pass on, because I'm just very aware for my two friends that they don't have these relatives in this country to like pass on those things. So perhaps I'll put them in your direction. Yes, you've got top tips for them as well.
Definitely. And the other thing is, like, if they get ill or something, yes, the healthcare system is similar, but it's not exact. So it could be that like a doctor in Sicily would say, oh, do this. And then a doctor in London would be like, no, do this. And you're like, I don't know what to do. And, you know, if it is a decision that you have to make for yourself, it's one thing. But as soon as you have to make it for another little person, you're like, whoa, I hope I get this right. But mothers in general, we always wonder like, oh, I hope I get it right.
I think the conclusion is you're doing your best and no one's going to get it always right. Like, that's always the challenge of parenthood as well as motherhood, like for the fathers as well.
Yeah, there are many books, but there isn't one way of doing it. And there must be a reason why.
I saw this really challenging, not so much challenging for me because I really appreciate them, but this statement on social media that said how you should give your mum the benefit of the doubt because she's only living her life for the first time as well. And it's that thing like, your mum's not done this before. Maybe you've got older siblings or maybe you haven't, but she's learning to be a mother at the same time as you're being a child and growing up.
Yeah. And there's a lot of pressure put on mothers and fathers to be in a certain way, or these are the kind of things that we kind of need to go God with and say, okay, maybe I'm just living a little bit obsessed with what is expected of me in my own little world. And sometimes helping others and doing more for others helps your life in such a way because it puts it in perspective and it enriches your life, and you don't live for your own, you know, family or your own needs. You live for something great. Going back to the challenges, another challenge that I face is, you know, having kids and wanting to continue volunteering for Santa Gidio, but I can't think my life without either of those things. So it's a particular mission. And I think my daughter and my son would benefit from having a community of people who love them, but other people benefit as well. So it's not just for them, it's for others as well.
What do you wish you'd known? Because we kind of talked about what piece of advice would you give to your 17-year-old self, but what do you wish you'd known before you came to the UK, before you found your husband, before you found your children?
There's a few things I'd wish I'd known, if that's okay. I think that the first thing that I wish I knew was that God asks us for sacrifices, and that's okay. That is part of living life to the full. And if you do embrace the sacrifice or that particular choice that you're being asked to make in that particular moment, it might not be for you and then move on. But if there's something there, you're going to need to say no to other things. And as much as it's a sacrifice, it really is the way to live your life to the full. The second thing is that when you least expect it, you are loved. Like, God is there for you, but you might find that you can only tell looking back. So you just need to trust that he's there for you at that point. And, you know, even though the path that is not really exactly how you imagine it to be. And I think going back to the identity side of things, I wish I knew that it was okay to have a complex identity, to not be a stereotype. So I hope that, you know, maybe somebody will hear this and feel like it's okay to be themselves and wanting to find their own mission in life. I think the people who truly love you will take the time to get to know you for the individual person that you are. And God doesn't really see us in stereotypes or puts us in boxes, you know. I always have to say, oh, I'm Italian, but I lived in New York. And so are you American? No, but I lived also in England. Oh, so like, do you feel British or not? I'm like, well, I live in England, like, you know, and I think it's okay. I think God and the people who know you, they won't have a problem with your complex upbringing or diverse kind of background. And I think the more, yeah, as I said before, like the more we accept each other in this way, the more we will better each other and we will help with each other's discernment and what we need to do. There was a point, my uni was still in the UK, but I also did an Erasmus in Spain for 6 months. So I almost didn't do it because I was too afraid to try and explain people where I was from. And I think I would have missed out on a lot of friendships and learning. I'm grateful that I found Sant'Egidio. I'm grateful for my family, my new family and my previous family. I'm grateful that I can, you know, it is a complex world, but I feel like with God, there is the fact that you're trying to follow your mission, it gives you such agency to be able to say, oh, you know, I don't like the fact that homeless people are in the streets. Okay, well, let's do something about it. That's what I'm really grateful for. The fact that with my life, I can do something about the things that I care about. Saint Ignatius says, go forth and set the world on fire. So I feel like that's what we all should do.
Absolutely. That is such a good way to end an episode as well, that we should all go set the world on fire, like metaphorically, not literally. It's been wonderful to have this conversation with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So thanks for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. I know this episode is going to change the way I think about my mission in life. The conversation is so open and honest and is really thinking about how you've got to sometimes just put what God's calling you to first. And that's really challenging for us all. How about you? I'd love to hear how this story resonated with you. And why not also tell us if you're facing experience you wish you knew how to look at differently? It might just be something we can help with. So do write to me at jcorcoran@thinkingfaith.org and find out more about themes we discussed today at thinkingfaith.org. So thank you again for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time on Things I Wish I Knew.